Hundreds of thousands of children have entered the U.S., mostly from Central America, in the past few years. After some time in detention centers, they go to live with family members across the country. Most enroll in public schools. This morning, WAMU's Kavitha Cardoza begins a series of stories on these students, and Kavitha joins us now. Kavitha, you focused your reporting on Prince George's County. Why is that?
Well, Esther, they've seen a dramatic increase in their numbers, and they're really trying hard to help these children. They've created a newcomer language class, they've hired trauma counselors, and are intentionally being welcoming. Many school systems don't do that.
I imagine it can be challenging for a school system to follow through on all of this.
Very. I mean, scarce resources are always an issue, but schools play a critical role because for these kids, it's a different language, different culture, different family life. Educators are like first responders, helping them process that upheaval.
There are critics who say no one, including children, should come to the U.S. illegally.
Yes, but remember, it's completely legal for these children to seek asylum, which many of them do. And also, the series is not about the controversy over these children entering the U.S. It's about what happens once they're here. They attend public schools, which again is their legal right.
You began reporting on this story more than a year ago, right? Before the coronavirus pandemic?
That's right. I spent most of 2019 reporting. Remember, unaccompanied minors, those without a parent crossing the border, was one of the biggest stories last year. This year, there was COVID, then the election.
But students are still enrolled in school and educators are still doing the work.
Exactly. And it's way more challenging because of online learning. For example, in Prince George's County schools, registering one of these kids used to take 3 hours. Now it takes over 3 days. What is now a silent, empty room was super busy last year.
¿Es el niño, el muchacho?
At 8 o'clock, a large room in the International Student Building is crammed with parents waiting to register their kids for school. Jacqueline Ortega is a bilingual registrar.
It hasn't been extreme madness yet. My worst nightmare would be the copier stops working.
Staff are going through individual documents, proof of residency, vaccinations, previous school records.
¿Viene de qué país? Salvador.
Almost everyone has a foreign passport, but no one asks whether they're here legally. Ortega says they can't.
We're not able to ask their status. Federal law prohibits that. We're interested in doing the registration and getting these children in school as soon as possible.
Prince George's County is a school system of 130,000 students. During the last academic year, it ranked fourth of all counties in the U.S. receiving unaccompanied children, after Harris County, Texas, Los Angeles, and Miami-Dade. The kids are mostly from Central America, fleeing violence and poverty.
We are getting students from Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala.
Pat Cianconi is in charge of international enrollment. She's looking at a spreadsheet of students who have registered today. Not all are undocumented. There's really no way to tell. But she says the increase is staggering. 10 years ago, they enrolled fewer than 4,000 international students in the district.
This year, we're probably going to be enrolling 10,000 students.
They didn't quite hit that number, but only because of the coronavirus. In the past few years, there's been a dramatic increase in the number of children arriving in the U.S. In fiscal year 2019, more than 75,000 unaccompanied minors and more than 475,000 families with children crossed the southern border. Public schools are often the first place these children encounter Americans who are not law enforcement. It's also the first place many say they're treated with kindness. Prince George's County has tripled the number of bilingual enrollment staff, registrars, interpreters, and counselors. As Cianconi looks at her data, I notice there's a column for language.
When you look at whether the students speak English,
right,
it's like no,
right.
No.
Almost all of them say no English.
In this district, it's Diane Yohi's job to gauge their English fluency.
¿Estás listo para escuela?
She's meeting with 6-year-old Esteban and his father, Gudiel. We're using their last names to protect their privacy. The little boy wears a red T-Rex shirt and his big brown eyes strain to see over the table.
Verde.
¿Es tu favorito?
They've arrived from Guatemala less than 2 months ago. Both look scared.
One thing I make sure to say is bienvenido or bienvenida, because I don't think anyone has told these children and these families welcome. welcome to the U.S., welcome to our school system. Hopefully, they begin with that encouragement and that hope for the future.
Yuhi doesn't administer the 90-minute English test for most of these children anymore.
A child who has no English to be facing a test that requires high-level academic reading and writing, speaking and listening, that is just not humane.
There's also a more practical reason. If every child took the test, some kids would have to wait 6 months to get into school.
Yo está sexto.
Esteban's father, Gudiel, has only completed the sixth grade. He left behind his wife, baby daughter, and everything that was familiar, hoping his son could have a better life in America.
Doctor?
Go to college, become a doctor. Gudiel believes education is Esteban's only hope, but that dream comes at a steep cost.
Pues emocionado por él, pero...
I'm happy for my son and the opportunities he'll have, but I'm sad because I miss our family.
Many children here have large gaps in their education and are often way behind academically, even in their home language. Before Esteban, Yohi met with a 15-year-old from El Salvador who had only completed sixth grade. Before that, there were two sisters who should have been in middle school but couldn't read or write at all. Yohi gives Esteban a sticker of a soccer ball, which reads, "You're on the ball." She's unsure how to translate the phrase, but Esteban doesn't care. He loves the picture. He slaps it on his t-shirt and for the first time this morning grins delightedly. This year, the numbers of undocumented children have dropped considerably, in part because of the Trump administration's health order to turn away everyone at the border to prevent the spread of coronavirus. But Pat Cianconi, who runs the international student program here, says she expects those numbers to climb.
I absolutely think that the numbers will go right back up when the pandemic passes. No doubt.
She's right. The numbers have already started to increase.
For undocumented immigrant children, learning English is an obvious but critical first step. Children who struggle with the language are more likely to do poorly in school, repeat grades, and drop out. But it's more than that. For these kids, learning English is also a way to fit in, translate for parents, and navigate a new culture. Prince George's County, Maryland has almost 30,000 English learners. Most are in the country legally, but the district has seen an increasing number of undocumented children from Central America enroll in school. In our ongoing series, WAMU's Kavitha Cardoza looks at a new program the district developed to support English learners.
Six kindergartners are singing along very hesitantly. They're all recent arrivals. Some have been in the U.S. for just 2 weeks. Teacher Tanya Gan Lim doles out praise liberally.
Very good. Awesome job.
They're going over a lesson on body parts. They dance, play games, write and speak, centered around this theme.
What can we do with our feet?
Wow, awesome.
7-year-old Anna is from El Salvador. We're using her first name to protect her privacy. When she's asked a question in English, her answer is clear.
Anna cannot say it.
Anna cannot say it. Her classmate Fernanda from Guatemala has been in school just 2 days and doesn't yet know the English word for nose.
You can act it out.
Smell.
Very good. Very
Prince
good.
George's schools developed this newcomer class for the first time last year. It's to get children learning basic vocabulary they'd use every day in a classroom just for them. They get the specialized support they need for an hour a day. Gan Lim, who was an English learner herself, says it builds their confidence.
In the mainstream classrooms, it's very common they feel shy or they don't want to talk, they don't want to make mistakes.
This silence is sometimes misinterpreted, says Melissa Canny, who oversees all 30,000 English learners in the school system. Classroom teachers may feel these kids aren't interested in learning or they don't know how to help.
There's a fear. The newcomers arrive, they don't speak English. The teachers, they're kind of fearful. What do I do? They're just staring at me. The teachers just really want support.
Before the pandemic, there was a big push system-wide to support regular classroom teachers with English learners. They're taught to use strategies like visual aids and hands-on learning. That's become much harder now that all classes are online. But the goal is still the same, to get these children into mainstream classes full-time. One child, Jimmy, we're using his nickname for privacy, came from El Salvador when he was 10. He knew three phrases in English.
Hello, how are you?
Nice to meet you.
Some kids in school picked on him.
Some people born here, like, for them, people that don't speak English, they were like migos or chanchis.
Derogatory words in Spanish.
No me, me sentí.
Jimmy says he felt mad and sad. He stopped speaking. Learning English is the same for any child, documented or not. The first step is learning conversational English, which takes about 2 years. Academic English, or learning to write an essay or analyze different arguments, is much more difficult and typically takes more than 7 years.
In our own studies, in other studies, no ambivalence. The kids want to learn English.
Marcelo and Carola Suarez Orozco are both professors at UCLA. They say we often discuss individual factors that make it easier for kids to learn English, like do their parents speak the language? But both researchers argue that social factors are just as important. For example, school segregation. Marcelo says public schools are segregated, not just by income and race, but also by language.
One of the extraordinary findings that we had is having one friend who speaks English well is a very, very good predictor of your grades. Very few of our youth in our study could say that they had one friend who was an English dominant speaker.
Jimmy has a friend, an American, who helped him with words he didn't understand.
He's like my brother to me. He helped me a lot.
With the shutdown, Jimmy doesn't see him as much. Teachers worry their students aren't hearing English in the hallways or on the playground now that they aren't in school. Another factor is school quality. Undocumented children are more likely to be in schools that are under-resourced, have high dropout rates, and violence. All that makes it more difficult for a child to learn English. And a third factor is whether children feel welcome, not just in school, but in the larger society. Carola says kids feel they don't belong when their mother tongue is viewed as inferior.
Speaking the language of the family is what is natural to all of us. But when they start to get dirty looks, or when they're actually publicly berated, they will begin to shut down. And we see problems of children beginning to be ashamed about their families and themselves.
Ironically, she says, if a child keeps up with their home language, it's much easier for them to learn English. Just 2 months later, back in teacher Tanya Gan Lim's classroom, students don't need the help of recorded music to sing Days of the Week. Anna, for example, can speak in longer sentences and is more confident, though she still needs practice with pronunciation.
Wednesday. Very good.
They've learned vocabulary around body parts and weather. Today, it's food.
Bread. Very good. Say bread.
Bread.
Okay, how do we say this in Spanish?
Pan,
yes.
Very cool. Lim has brought in plastic toys of common foods.
So we're going to pretend we're going to have our favorite meal. Okay? Favorito, right? Favorite meal.
Six-year-old Manuel is happily acculturated.
Pizza.
And?
Ice cream.
Good.
Soda.
Okay, very good.
Anna goes next.
For dinner, I like to eat apple and banana and eggs.
Very good job. Any good finger snaps for Anna? Great job. Awesome. So now,
she wants to be a teacher when she grows up. But tell me why you want to learn English.
Because to be smart.
You're going to be smart if you speak English?
Mm-hmm. I practice on my mom's phone.
Oh, you practice on your mom's phone?
Mm-hmm.
How?
And Google.
Anna feels a sense of responsibility to learn English. This 7-year-old translates for her mother when they go to the grocery store.
If we go somewhere and my mom says, how much? And I say, it's $3 or $4.
And how does your mother feel when you help her?
Good. She felt good. She said, I love you.
Many undocumented children are very vulnerable already. They're poor, they don't have health insurance, and they struggle with basic needs like food and housing. But what might be the defining characteristics of this population is the considerable trauma they've experienced in their home countries and in the U.S. In part 3 of our series on undocumented children in public schools, Kavitha Cardoza reports Prince George's County is focusing on mental health support, both online and in person.
Berta Romero is a counselor for English learners at Mary Harris Mother Jones Elementary School in Adelphi. It's a new position that was created before the pandemic to help undocumented children. The stories she hears are awful.
I had a case where she said that mom had to cover her eyes because she saw that people drowning in the river, dying.
Did you say drowning in the river?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the mother...
Mom had to cover her eyes.
How old was she?
She's a second grader.
A mother tearfully recounts how MS-13 gang members were molesting her daughter on the way to school.
And I have another kid. He came with his dad. So he came on the truck, and it was a lot of people in the truck. And he couldn't even breathe, and that was helping him to take some air, you know? Like pushing the other people to bring him up and be able to breathe.
Children talk about seeing women raped, or people who couldn't keep up with other migrants on the journey and were left behind.
Having those flashbacks all the time and living with that is not easy. It's not easy, especially parents there, they don't know how to handle that at home. And that's why these kids are having those behaviors in the classrooms.
Romero says the weight of these experiences is like carrying a big backpack with boulders in it. Once undocumented children get here, the trauma continues at U.S. detention centers when many are separated from their parents. Some talk of cells kept frigid, inadequate food, and no access to basic hygiene. Children say adults threatened them when they broke one of the many rules. No talking, no playing, no making friends. Prince George's County has been supporting its educators by helping them recognize the signs of trauma in the classroom. Kerry Bogart also teaches at this school in Adelphi.
Some of the kids are just silent criers. They will just sit and cry because they're missing their mom or they miss their family back in El Salvador. Sometimes it can just be random outbursts of tears. Is mommy going to be at the bus stop? I'm worried that she's not going to be there.
One of her kindergartners would get upset and crawl under the table.
I would have to stop. The kids are working and I would talk to him and he would eventually come out. But when that's happening 3, 4, 5 times a day and you're missing out on instruction, that can be very harmful.
Bogart says when she knows a child is struggling, having a professional counselor like Romero on hand is a critical support. But this easy access was before the pandemic. In recent years, the district has stepped up hiring bilingual staff, including counselors and social workers. But there are huge challenges. So Prince George's County Schools also partner with area nonprofits for additional support. And educators receive professional development.
One of the things that you see is what we call compounded loss.
Margarita Alegria is chief of the Disparities Research Unit at Massachusetts General Hospital and a professor at Harvard. She was invited to help educators understand how to support the large waves of students crossing the border.
They lost their cultural milieu. They lost their familiar language, their customs, their habits. They lost their social networks, and many of them have lost their social status.
Teachers have to identify and understand the roots of behaviors like anger and frustration and how to handle them before any learning can take place. Alegria says trauma can manifest also as physical problems, headaches, stomach aches, insomnia.
Concentration and learning problems. So here's where the teachers have to be very aware that concentration could be not that the kids are ADHD, but actually that the kids are really trying to deal with the trauma in this way.
Cuando yo iba a la escuela, fui amenazado.
When Nando was in the fourth grade, his older brother was killed by gangs in El Salvador. His mother was terrified for his safety, so he stopped going to school. For years, he stayed indoors. It felt like prison. Nando's family didn't have enough to eat, so at 16, he decided to make the treacherous journey to the U.S., leaving behind his parents and younger brother. He was helped by a smuggler, otherwise known as a coyote.
I had a coyote who was helping me, but halfway through, the coyote took my money and left. I was 16. I worked on a farm in Mexico for 2 months and made money to continue the journey. I was sad. I was tired. I felt desperate.
Nando applied for political asylum at the border, and after 6 months in 2 detention centers, his aunt in Maryland became his sponsor. He was just settling into a routine at school when he heard gangs had murdered his other brother as well.
We were 3. Now it's only me.
Nando became depressed, developed headaches, and considered dropping out of school several times. Beth Hood is a social worker at High Point High in Beltsville. She says many children display remarkable resilience. Others struggle. One of her students who seemed fine had a panic attack after seeing a small fight break out in the cafeteria.
After that event, she completely spiraled downward. Couldn't focus in class, was often tearful. In talking with her about what caused the panic attack, she talked about having witnessed her best friend being killed. So our students are not students that you can expect to just, you know, go into the classroom and learn English and be fine.
Nando, the teenager from El Salvador, lives in a rented room and works a part-time job until 1 a.m. so he can send money home. He says thanks to caring educators, he graduated this year.
I'm the only one left, so I wanted to show my mother I could achieve something. I wanted to do this for her. We miss each other so much.
All this support is much harder to provide with school online. Social workers aren't doing much counseling anymore. They're trying to locate students or provide tech support. It feels like everyone has boulders in their backpacks. Even for a school district like Prince George's, which has invested time and resources to better understand undocumented children, it's still really challenging. But Margarita Alegria tells educators not to give up, that any little thing they can do to give these children hope creates resilience.
Schools are where kids spend most of the time. It's really the system of care where we can make the biggest gains.
And with help, she says, healing is very, very possible.
The journey many undocumented children take to the United States is a harrowing one. The challenges continue when they enter public schools, either in person or virtually, with new rules, a new language, and new culture. Prince George's County schools have made a conscious effort to welcome these students by respecting their past. In the fourth part of our series, WAMU's Kavitha Cardoza reports that this approach may help the kids' health and academic outcomes.
Welcome to Mary Harris Mother Jones Elementary School. Come on in.
Principal Karen Woodson shows off her school of more than 1,000 kids in Adelphi. She recently retired, but while she was principal, she made a real effort to welcome immigrant children, documented or not. Front office staff are bilingual, and every sign posted is translated into Spanish. She pointed to the large flags hanging in the atrium as we made our way to the library.
They're going to recognize El Salvador right away. Every country in Central and South America is represented. This is our media center. We do stock titles in Spanish.
This school has seen dramatic increases in the number of newcomers, children who arrived in the U.S. during the past year and speak little to no English. In 2018, Woodson thought it was a temporary blip.
We saw a 100% increase in our newcomers over the previous year. And then this school year began, which is school year 1920. And lo and behold, we had a 100% increase again.
Recently arrived immigrants are now 16% of the school's population. Woodson makes these children feel valued by celebrating their backgrounds.
I also see signs that one says, being bilingual is my superpower.
That's right. Yeah, and that is something we definitely promote in the building and letting students know that you are adding English. You're not getting rid of your first language. Hi.
Yeah.
Lo siento mucho. I'm sorry.
Woodson, an African-American, switches easily between English and Spanish.
First I get, wait, why are you speaking Spanish? And then the next question I get is, well, where are you from? And I go, I'm from New York. And they laugh and they go, what? I'm like, I study your language. Sort of like what you're studying. I did the same thing. And I took the time, and you can be fluent too.
Woodson says this helps all children see no one language is better than another. And she wants children to feel proud of their own culture. As principal, Woodson beefed up support staff, adding 3 more bilingual teacher aides, a bilingual counselor, and a bilingual community liaison who can connect newcomer families to outside services. But even with these supports, everything is harder during the pandemic. Children don't see the flags or bilingual posters now that schools are shut. And even before the transition to online learning, Woodson warned that educators are exhausted.
With the influx, I have to be very honest, teachers are tired. It's a lot, but guess what? We're tired but committed. We'll rest, but there's no quitting.
Building relationships is also harder because of the coronavirus shutdown. Educators can't pull a student aside for a quick chat in the hallway or joke with them after school. But as recently as February this year, social worker Beth Hood from High Point High in Beltsville organized circles to support her undocumented students. Their English is very limited, so she speaks in Spanish. Sometimes Hood teaches them breathing exercises. Sometimes she explains the basic aspects of U.S. education, from the layout of the building to the role of school nurses to the expectation they come to class every day. Coping skills promote healing. Today, students list factors that help them do well.
La confianza.
Confidence. Familiar, la paciencia, family love. Patience, advice from parents, and learning English.
In 2014, after a big wave of unaccompanied minors arrived in Prince George's County, teachers at this school asked the principal to create a social worker position instead of hiring another teacher. Now there are two. The school has about 300 newcomers. One student, Luis, was 16 when he fled violence in Guatemala and arrived in the U.S. alone. He spoke Mam, an indigenous language, a little Spanish, and no English. Luis works at a grocery store from 3:30 in the afternoon to 1 in the morning every day. He has to repay the coyote, the man who smuggled him into the country, as well as pay his lawyer and landlord. He also sends money home.
If you say $1 right here and over
there, even $1 here is a lot of money in Guatemala.
At first, when customers at his job asked him a question, he says he couldn't respond in English.
Then I practice more. Now I help them with everything, no problem.
Luis squeezes in class assignments after work, but sometimes it's hard to wake up. Beth Hood says Luis's story is pretty common. Undocumented students start off very motivated to do well in school, but many desperately need to work.
They work in factories. They work in restaurants. They work cleaning. It's the most arduous, crappy jobs that are available. That's where the temptation hits, is that they're able to make money that they've never made in their lives, and they're able to support their families.
She says, unfortunately, what's sacrificed is their education.
Because their physical body can only sustain that amount of work and studying for a temporary period of time. So with the unaccompanied minor students, we see them leaving school at a much, much higher rate.
Hood says because of the pandemic, her time now is spent tracking down students who don't attend class, doing tech support, or connecting kids with food pantries. But she still tries to fit in video chats to see how her students are coping. Hood's focus is the same as before, to support kids' mental health so they can succeed academically. She encourages them to share stories about what their lives were like before they came to the U.S.
How they used to tend cows, or how they used to make tortillas, or how they used to help their grandmother go to the market. I mean, these are real life, day-to-day strengths and experiences that they bring.
Back in the circle from February this year, students joke around while they're working. Hood is delighted. It's a completely different vibe from the beginning of the year when everyone looked terrified. Last year, the principal organized a holiday lunch just for them, complete with a DJ.
And they all danced, and the kids danced with the staff, and it was just pure joy. It brings that sense of compassion and love and joy into the school building. And we know that every positive experience a youth has, that does build resilience and trust.
It's the last group's turn to share.
One of the things that helps me is talking to my mom or making new friends. I want to accomplish something, have a good future.
At every opportunity, Hood encourages them to be optimistic about the future. She says her job is to help them see this moment in their lives for what it is, just a moment.
Many undocumented children come to the U.S. to rejoin a parent after years apart, but it's not often the joyous reunion they expect. The child can feel resentful, like their parents abandoned them. The parent can see their child as ungrateful, not acknowledging all the sacrifices made to bring them here. And it's often up to schools to find a way to help. In the final part of our series on undocumented children in Prince George's County, WAMU's Kavitha Cardoza reports on the challenges of reunification.
Paola was 10 when her mother came to the U.S., leaving her and her baby brother in the Dominican Republic. They had virtually no contact until 3 years later when she sent for them. Unlike most unaccompanied minors who enter the U.S. from Central America, Paola grew up in the Dominican Republic.
In the first days, it was like she was a stranger to us.
Paola says life in Prince George's County was very different and difficult, and the family dynamics were challenging. Her little brother thought of Paola as his mother.
And I kind of raised him those 3 years. When my brother did something, I would, oh no, don't do this, don't do that. And my mom was like, okay, I'm here. You don't have to. But my brother used to pay more attention to me than to her.
When Paola took her brother to a nearby playground, some kids would refuse to play with them.
I remember there was this one time an American kid told my brother, he said, you know, the difference between you and a book is that the book has papers. And my brother didn't understand, but I did understand, and he hurt me so much.
Paola lashed out at her mother.
And I used to blame my mom a lot. I was like, why did you bring me here? And I remember I used to blame her about my legal status too.
Her mother wouldn't say anything, but late at night, Paola would hear her crying. Everything seemed like it was falling apart. She grew distracted and depressed. Teachers often don't know how to deal with challenges like this, but luckily her school in Prince George's County had a partnership with a non-profit for free counseling in Spanish.
You know, in the beginning with a psychologist, you just cry a lot because you talk a lot of these things in the past and how they hurt you. But then I was like, what can I do now?
As time went on, Paola noticed how hard her mother worked and how often people would take advantage of her. She cleaned houses.
And the person that used to pay her didn't want to pay her one time. And they say, I'm not supposed to pay her. You're not even legal in this country. And that was very hard because we was expecting the money. And that week, it was very hard for us to have food at home.
One day, her mother missed work at another job because she wasn't well. Immigration and Customs Enforcement raided her workplace and picked up 30 employees.
It was like a shock in my heart. Just the fact that she will wake up one morning and then I wouldn't see her again.
Paola saw school as a refuge. Her two best friends were also undocumented. They're from Central America and told her about their journeys. One walked to the U.S. with her cousin, but he died in the desert before they got here. The other told Paola how her mother was locked in the trunk of a car while she sat in front blindfolded, next to the coyote who smuggled her in for part of the journey.
She told me that he would start touching her face and her arms and telling her that he wanted her to stay and he wanted to marry her. And she was a child. She was like 14 years old.
She saw their strength and started to learn lessons from their struggles. She also says her church was welcoming, where people shared their stories.
And it was like very hard to hear them. But at the same time, I felt like so honored to know people that had been through the situation and they still smile. That made me feel like maybe this is my place, because if you are close to people that have suffered this much and they still find a way to see the good in life, that's the people that I want to be with.
Another teacher referred her to the nonprofit Casa de Maryland after-school program, where she learned she could still go to college even though she was undocumented.
I had the opportunity to just have a dream and have an education, and I'm just very excited about it.
Paola says she can finally see a future.
That was WAMU's Kavitha Cardoza, who is joining us now to talk more about her reporting on this topic. Kavitha, you reported on this for more than a year. What was your biggest takeaway?
I would have to say, Esther, the strength that these children have. They just amazed me. Their resilience, their work ethic, their sense of responsibility. The other thing I would say is Prince George's County educators. So many of them work so hard to help these kids succeed.
Some of these children, as we heard from Paola's story, have challenges that spill into the classroom. What is the school district's responsibility?
I spoke with Alvin Thornton. He's the four-term chairperson of the Board of Education in Prince George's County. He says there are several reasons to make sure these kids have support. One, it's the law. Two, they're the future workforce. And three, well, let's listen to Thornton.
For me, the most important question, that it is morally and really spiritually inappropriate to mistreat the children who come from these families, right, and not give them equal opportunities.
He says it wasn't too long ago that African-American children were unwelcome in schools, and we should learn from history.
It sounds like Prince George's County schools are motivated to help undocumented children. What are some of the challenges ahead to help these kids?
Well, the challenges they face are really a microcosm of challenges all school districts in the region face. In the short term, online learning continues to be a huge challenge. In the long term, I would say the budget. Christian Rhodes is the chief of staff to the superintendent, and he told me budget is a function of priority, but the school district is anticipating a significant deficit next year. Rhodes is hoping legislators fund districts based on a state commission's recommendations.
My hope is that those in power and those who make policy and those who allocate resources recognize kind of this looming storm that is on the other side of COVID.
And once the pandemic is over, is it likely that more undocumented children will try to enter the U.S. compared to this year?
I think so. The numbers have already started to increase. A judge recently told the Trump administration they couldn't turn away undocumented minors on the basis of coronavirus. Another court order made the Trump administration start accepting applications for immigrants who came here as children. The Biden administration has also indicated they'll push for several changes, including a pathway to citizenship for the millions of undocumented immigrants in the country.
That's WAMU's Kavitha Cardoza. Kavitha, thank you so much for your reporting on this project.
Thank you.
This series was produced in partnership with the Hechinger Report and USC Annenberg Center for Health Journalism.
Regional news coverage from WAMU 88.5 is made possible through listener support. You can join with your contribution at WAMU.org. Click the donate button. And thanks.